Well, thanks for choosing GoldSeek.com Radio. Today's special guest, James Turk from Gold Money. Well, James Turk, founder of GoldMoney.com, author of The Coming Collapse of the Dollar, How to Profit from It. Welcome back.
Thanks, Chris.
Gold is still up by about 10% for the year. We've seen the HUI off of its lows by 60, 70%, the XAU 20 to 30%. It also seems like we might have found a floor in the precious metal sector.
Yeah, you're looking at it from dollar terms. In dollar terms, we finally have a floor, I expect. I mean, if you look at gold in terms of a variety of different currencies around the world, gold continues to rise month after month, week after week, and there was no correction on a number of different currencies. But in dollar terms, as we know, we basically, had the correction, and now it looks like we're getting ready to move higher again. And, there's every reason for that to happen. Fundamentally, gold is cheap.
The gold-to-silver ratio, a very interesting metric. It gives one an idea. Investor appetite from gold to silver, and you've kept your eye on this ratio for some time, and you've noted something of an anomaly recently.
Yeah, for the last 20 years, the ratio has gone up to 80, or the low 80 area. In other words, 80 ounces of silver to purchase 1 ounce of gold. And that marked a turning point. And the ratio has fallen. It's fallen at different levels and different speeds. It fell back in 2011 all the way to 31 ounces of silver to 1 ounce of gold. And, here we are again back up in the 80 level. So my expectation would be that silver is going to start outperforming gold going forward from here. So basically what that means, Chris, is that even though I'm bullish on gold, I'm even more bullish on silver.
We have seen silver certainly struggled relative to gold since 2011. One factor there was the unbelievable rise from $15 to $50, threefold increase over just a period of 7 to 8 months, almost unprecedented in the markets. You'd have to go back to maybe the NASDAQ circa 1999, 2000 to find an index on its own. But I wanted to move on to the Federal Reserve. Our policymakers are backpedaling strongly on what looked like was a sure bet for a couple of rate hikes this year in 2016. Now the Fed Funds futures contracts are indicating virtually no chance, very low odds of a rate hike over the next 12 months. Do you think this is an important factor, or have the markets already discounted this?
Well, I think it's probably one of the most important things that the markets are facing at the moment, because you have the central planning coming from the Federal Reserve, thinking that they know better than what the market does in terms of setting interest rates. And as a consequence, what's happening is we're basically destroying the capitalist system, where interest rates are the most important barometer in terms of interaction between people and the economy. The most immediate impact is that savers are being hurt badly by these interest rates that are near zero. And we really should have a more normal interest rate where savers are earning, 3 or 4 or even 5% on the money they save. The fact that there's no incentive to save is, destroying the incentive for saving. And as a consequence, if there's no incentive to save, where is the money that banks are going to be lending coming from? It's going to come from the printing press. So what's happening is it's one of the results of central planning, and it's going to blow up at some point in time. In other words, we're going to have a train wreck. Whether that train wreck is this year, next year, after that, nobody can predict. But the Fed is in between a rock and a hard place. They're afraid to raise interest rates because there's so much debt in the system. On the other hand, savers are being hurt badly. So they basically are just going to sit on their hands, at least until after the election.
Do you expect then for our Fed officials to follow in the footsteps on both sides of both ponds, and the BOJ and the European Union ministers, economic ministers, who have essentially moved at least one or two of their benchmark lending rates into negative?
It's different when you're talking about the world's reserve currency and moving to negative interest rates. Japan is not the world's reserve currency. The euro is not the world's reserve currency. The U.S. has that position, and it's unique. So if you're going to take the world's reserve currency to zero interest rates, you're going into uncharted territory. We've never been there before. But we are seeing some impact from what's happening in Europe and what's happening in Japan. There's no incentive for people to hold the Japanese yen or the euro. And as Switzerland's a good example. You've got negative interest rates there. What people are doing is they're trying to move into the 500 Swiss franc paper note to avoid having to pay the bank for keeping their money in a bank account. And now you have governments trying to get rid of the 500 Swiss franc note. There's talk in the UK about getting rid of the 50 pound note, and in the US, $100 bill. So what that means is people are going to look for alternative ways to hold their liquidity. And obviously, Chris, this is going to be very, very beneficial to the gold and silver price because you can actually hold gold and silver now at rates cheaper than you would be holding the Swiss franc. You know, everybody says, well, you have a negative interest rate in gold or silver in the sense that you have to pay for storage. Well, the storage costs on gold are a lot less now than the negative interest rates people are paying in the Swiss franc and some other currencies around the world.
Can you make a case for 20-to-1 gold to silver ratio, or even the more traditional, let's say, the next few years?
Yeah, you know, in 2011, as I mentioned, we were at 31 ounces of silver to 1 ounce of gold. And the way I look at it is like this. Geologists tell me that there's about 10 times more silver than gold in the Earth's crust. So I think the natural ratio, one would think, would be 10 ounces of silver to 1 ounce of gold. So why are we at 80 instead of 10? Well, it's because silver has is demanded for different reasons than gold. Gold's demand is basically monetary. Silver is both a monetary demand as well as a industrial demand. That creates some volatility in silver relative to gold. So you have the ratio fluctuating. The historical ratio is normally about 15 or 16 ounces of silver to 1 ounce of gold. That's when under the gold standard, when silver was still used as subsidiary. So my expectation would be that you are going to go lower, and we'll probably, on this move, go lower than the 31 ounces of silver to 1 ounce of gold that we saw back in April of 2011. You know, how much lower it goes than that, I don't really know. But the point I'm making is that given that we're at 80 now and we're going to be heading a lot lower, silver is going to outperform gold when you look at it in dollar terms.
One of the points you've made today will resonate with our listeners. Rates have been held low. I mean, you simply, as a retiree, as one dependent on passive income, it's really challenging today. I think anyone would agree to find interest or dividend or coupon that makes the risk worthwhile. And so it seems as though the system has been gamed. I know this has been talked about a lot on talk radio, but by authorities and policymakers, almost forces every professional and investor to try to squeeze out as much capital gain as possible from the market. And that eventually has to backfire because leverage gets deployed on a massive scale. Eventually, you know, it's just that Will Rogers saying folks are going to be more concerned about the return of their capital than the return on their capital. Do you think that that's the wake-up moment when investors' passion for the precious metals returns?
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, there are two elements to this. One, of course, is the interest income that you'd be receiving on your money, or, you know, trying to get as much interest income as you can. But the other issue, which is just as important, is the safety aspect. You know, given the fact that governments around the world have passed legislation to allow for bail-ins, where depositors pay for a bank failure, there aren't a lot of safe places now to put your money. And that's why I think, again, this is a very positive backdrop for both gold and silver.
Do you like the CRB on a forward basis? It's been struggling now for so long, and crude oil has weighed heavily.
Yeah, you know, this is actually, I think, the critical thing that we have to be looking at going forward. You know, right now, the core inflation rate in the United States is at a 10-year high. It's been masked for a couple reasons. The cost of commodities has been going down, and you know, therefore, the inflation rate doesn't look as bad as it has been. But services, the price of services has been rising, and if commodities turn higher, which is what I expect is going to happen this year, commodity prices turn higher, you're going to see massive increases in the rate of inflation, and we're going to be well above the Federal Reserve's 2% target. And if we're well above the Federal Reserve's 2% target, what are they going to do then? Are they going to raise interest rates to fight inflation, or are they going to keep interest rates low to try to deal with the debt bubble that they've created? That's something that has to be watched as we go over the course of this year. I think commodity inflation is that's going to catch people off guard.
We certainly saw that in the shares this year. The mining sector is back on investors' radar screen, and of course the shorts are forced to cover at much higher prices. Do you see this theme persisting for the next year or two?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, these things are cyclical, and, you know, markets go from extreme overvaluation to extreme undervaluation. And the extreme undervaluation we've seen in the mining shares over the past couple of years has been historic. You know, by all my measures, this has never happened before. So if gold and silver move higher from here, and I expect them to do that, one has to think that the mining shares are going to respond very, very positively. And in fact, that's why they've done so well this year. You know, we've seen, you know, good moves in both gold and silver, but the mining shares themselves, the percentage gains there have far exceeded the moves in both gold and silver, which is what's to be expected because gold and silver are money. They don't generate cash flow. You know, they're just sterile assets that preserve purchasing power over long periods of time, whereas the mining shares themselves are an investment. So because they're an investment, you have different levels of risks that you don't get with gold and silver, and consequently, you would expect to see this outperformance in the mining shares themselves. And that is what you've seen this year, outperformance by the mining shares.
Today, I wonder if you could give us an idea of any topicality that we may have missed, anything I haven't covered.
Yeah, I think the thing that we need to be watching, you know, I'm over here in London, England, where I live, and British government is going to hold a referendum in June to enable the people to vote whether to stay in or stay out of the European Union. We can see the European ruffled at the edges because of the immigration issues and what's happening with the euro and a variety of other problems. And if the UK government referendum, if the people vote to leave the EU, I think that'll be another nail in the coffin of the EU. So I think there could be a lot of turmoil here in Europe over the course of the year. And that turmoil, not only political, will also have impact in the financial markets.
We don't hear much of that over here in the States. It's odd because I have family in London. We saw them in Florida. They didn't have much to say about that situation. Would it be a long-term benefit to the British Isles?
Well, this is my own personal opinion. I've looked at it a little bit and studied it, you know, from a financial point of view. And every year, the British government sends £12 billion to the EU. They get very little in return, in my view. All they get in return is regulations and rules, you know, created by bureaucrats living the life of luxury in Brussels. I think what we're seeing, you know, essentially worldwide is people want to control their own destiny. And as a consequence, I think, you know, Britain should vote to leave the European Union and just operate as a sovereign state, making its own rules, its own laws, and living in the world in a friendly basis with all countries, but not having to be part of a political union, which is what the EU has become. It's no longer just an economic free trade zone. It's being turned into a political union as well. So basically, I'm in favor of Britain leaving, but we shall see. You know, it's a long time before the election, which is June. We'll see how it develops.
Well, James Turk, I wonder if you'd like to tell folks just a bit more, please, about the services that you provide at Gold Money, as well as all of your interesting online commentary, writing, research, any other media.
Yeah, you can find me at goldmoney.com. Gold Money Incorporated is a publicly traded company on the Toronto Venture Exchange in Canada. The symbol is XAU.V.
Outstanding. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chris.